Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Hey, Matt, welcome to Crypto Nights. We are very excited to have you on our podcast as our guest speaker. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Awesome. Matt, why don't we start off with an introduction to you? Can you please tell our audiences who you are, what your background is, and what you're currently embarking on?
Sure. My name is Matthew Nolan. I've been in software most of my life, and I'm the CEO and founder of a company called Menlo One. We are building systems for sophisticated token sales.
That is awesome. Can you paint a picture of what it is? What does Menlo One do? How did it come about? What is the backstory? Why are you doing it?
The backstory. So I've been in crypto basically since the beginning. And I've been helping companies doing, in 2017, I started a company with some friends helping companies do ICOs. And we did about 20 of them with, you know, $200 million raised under our advisement. And I noticed a lot of friction in the space, you know, just coming from a, you know, consumer focused software as a service background. The discipline is to look for problems that need solving and solve them. And in working with these companies, I heard the same problems over and over. And I think that with, execution and the right design and the right product and the right technology, a little bit of an effort, relatively a little bit of effort can create a tremendous exponential effect.
Yeah, I see a multiple in terms of the leverage. So if you find the right point of fulcrum, I think making a couple of small changes might make a big difference. Amplify those results is what you're saying. So can you highlight some of those? I mean, that's a lot of, very few people have gone through as deeply as you have, being a part of 20 ICOs in 1 year. That must have been one heck of a year. But having said that, you are able to see, I mean, you're able to literally take the highlighter and highlight, okay, these are the frequently encountered problems in these ICO, end-to-end ICO use cases. So can you do that? Can you paint the picture and highlight what are the key problems that you have seen, and then maybe then talk about how you want to solve them using Menlo One?
Sure. So, I mean, there's a couple of, you know, I'll identify four key issues plaguing the ICO space today. The first one is terrible user experience. So anyone who's participated in an ICO knows how abrasive of an experience this is. Even for an expert, it could take 20 minutes of fiddling around with different wallets and different keys and saving JSON files and moving ETH here and there and using, you know, taking, uploading your passport and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, in a world where, you know, I can press a button on my phone and a car shows up to take me somewhere, you know, ICOs are not push button easy. They're a very complex user experience. The second thing to note is security concerns. You know, there's a matrix of potential attacks. It's a very broad attack surface from a security perspective. There's a million ways to phish someone's ETH address. People can be deceived easily. It's easy to, you know, websites have been hacked into even. There's a regulatory FUD. That's the third problem. You know, everyone right now is very unsure what the SEC is going to do. It's a very gray area right now. There's a lot of fear. The future seems unknown. And then the fourth one is, and probably the worst, is scams, right? People just outright scamming people out of their money, deceiving them. And it's very hard for the retail investor to parse, good from bad ICO investments.
Well put. I think that's a very succinct summary of the problems. So how have you gone about addressing these? Because you are looking at the problem from at least two different angles, if not more. One is from the ICO angle, as a person that's interested in launching their own ICO. Some of these are their challenges and they want to address them. And some of these are challenges for me, the retail investor. So Did I get the two perspectives? Those are the two major perspectives, right, that you have taken?
Yeah.
So how are you looking at solving them?
So I was formally trained. I've been programming since I was about 8 years old. And so when it came time to go to college, I actually chose design because that was I wasn't as good at that as I was as coding. And so I was fascinated by it. And I went to a nice design, very prestigious design school in San Francisco. And I kind of think, I kind of frame the world through the perspective of design. And I feel that if you design a system for a person to take a certain action, they will, if you go up to a door and there's, a knob to pull, right? The door is indicating to you like how to use it. You know what I mean? So in solving these problems in the ICO space, I think there's an opportunity to help. If you'll forgive, the position I'm taking, I think there's an opportunity to sort of craft how we want people using these tools and where we want decentralized technology to go and how we want it to evolve. And some, there are some companies out there solving some of these issues, especially around scams and security and regulation, by defaulting to what's tried and true, which is centralized regulation. We see a lot of security tokens. We see a lot of centralized entities. People are trying to figure out how to work regulatory bodies into the code because as humans, this is kind of, I guess, this is how our society has been architected for a long time. I'm taking the position that I think we can architect a system that actually makes people secure and is easy to use and is free of complications from regulatory bodies while at the same time maintaining the philosophies of decentralization and disintermediation and the benefits of upholding those philosophies. So we've architected a system that allows people to trade tokens between one another in a way that's completely decentralized and peer-to-peer and censorship resistant.
Okay. Do you want to dig a little deeper into that?
Yeah, I know it's kind of a vague description. Excuse me. So we architected a system where a retail investor can sign on, and what we're trying to do is arm the retail investor with the same tools and knowledge as an experienced institutional venture capitalist. Yeah. And there's reasons for us doing that, architecting the system to do that, but which I'll get to. But we want to arm mom and pop, the regular person, with the type of expertise previously reserved for Mark Andreessen or one of these guys, right? The super expert institutional guys. And so Mendel One is an experience where you log on and it's a little bit like a Kickstarter where you can browse different opportunities, browse different ICOs, and you can chat with the founder a little bit. If you see something you find interesting, you go in there, you chat with the founder, you see what the community is saying, you see what your friends think about it, what your friends are recommending, what the thought leaders that you're following, what they recommend. You can chat with, we have a system that incentivizes the smartest people in the world with the deepest domain expertise in whatever their niche is to review ICOs and review opportunities. So, the institutional investor can pay very expensive consultants to come in and help them vet deals because they have the pockets to do that. And the retail investor does not. So we're essentially crowdsourcing the type of due diligence previously reserved for institutional investors to enable the retail investor to make intelligent and informed decisions. And of course, we've simplified the transaction experience as well so that it's as easy as pressing a single button to buy a token, even if the token isn't even for sale yet.
Okay. And how much of this have you built and tested in parts? Or, I mean, I can understand that you experience these 20 ICOs and therefore you're very familiar with the problems. But as you and I know, the solution we think that they want versus they think they want or they end up really wanting it might be two different things. Or in the classic sense, have you reached the MVP? Have you seen user traction? Have you built something out? Or is that something you're planning to do post-ICO? Where are you in the process?
So, I mean, just in terms of product market fit, you know, we've arrived at this feature set. After a year of 2017, I was doing nothing but helping ICOs launch, companies launch ICOs. And just the being in the trenches, the boots on the ground, like I know what problems investors and startups are experiencing because I was the technical advisor to many. And I said, hey, call me anytime you want. Call me 4 a.m. I'm here to help you. And they would often call me actually at 4 a.m. And I would you know, help them with their problems. So I know that the problems that we're solving exist. So, you know, we've at least validated the business use cases behind everything that we're doing. From a technology standpoint, you know, there's basically four layers to Menlo. The top layer is communication and incentivized, decentralized, monetized communication. And that is a product that we call Town Hall. And that actually launches next week. It'll be working on testnet. We've been working on it for, we've been working on this iteration of it for about 6 months, but an early version of this, me and my colleagues were hired to build an early version of Town Hall by members of the Ethereum community to help the Ethereum community decide whether or not they should fork for the DAO hack. And so after we built that in 2016, we thought, oh, wow, an actual business use case for a blockchain product. You know, how interesting, you know, how different. So the first layer is Town Hall. That's our decentralized communication layer. The layer below that is guilds, which is our decentralized governance layer. And this is how people vote in a way that's trustless and transparent to arrive at a score about ICOs, right? It's not just one guy or one person running an ICO review site, or it's not just one venture capitalist in his opinion. You know, these are, you know, teams of experts who are voting in a way that's trustless and transparent about the quality of a deal or, you know, whether or not someone is being truthful, et cetera. The third layer is the marketplace. This is the interface, our transaction layer. All right. This is where you browse, you find things you like, you transact, you can initiate a transaction immediately. Leveraging our protocol, you can set your wallet to your Menlo wallet to make a transaction. Even before the ICO opens, this is the transaction layer, and then below, and then the foundation is Menlo Core. This is our decentralized database. We enable users to monetize data between one another in a way that in such a way that multiple nodes we've achieved the, you know, Byzantine fault tolerance while at the same time with the speed of a traditional web server, basically by leveraging gossip and Ethereum and a few other things.
Are you doing off-chain transactions in addition to on-chain transactions? Is that how you got to the speed that you wanted?
Well, we look at this as from a perspective of like which data points need the security guarantees of something like Ethereum. So anything around financial transactions or let's say, timestamps for certain bits of data or messages or these types of things. And so this is, for those types of data points, we're leveraging the Ethereum network heavily.
So you kind of looked at the process layer under a microscope and said, okay, only these are the pieces that require the blockchain and the rest of it doesn't. and you combine those two in a way that you are only going to the blockchain as needed, and therefore you increase the throughput speed. Am I getting it kind of right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So there is a a chance that a certain bit of data might be might be inaccurate for the duration of what it takes a block to confirm, where multiple nodes can come to consensus about what the data is. So we'll display data before the nodes come to consensus. So the time elapsed for the data is relevant. I hope I'm explaining that right.
Yeah.
It's a bit like a monetized BitTorrent. So we've sharded a database and multiple nodes share it, and we leverage Ethereum to keep track of who owes whom which money for transferring data from what shard.
Yeah.
So if Alice has a ICO profile and Bob wants to get it from her, he will effectively buy that profile from her, and then which happens instantly, the payment is settled on chain on Ethereum. Okay. And if Alice is a bad actor and she actually doesn't pay Bob, then she is, her reputation is ruined. It's damaged within the community, and reputation, the payout to the nodes is relative to the score of the reputation.
Makes sense. Okay. And incentivized, decentralized, monetized. That's what you talked about when you talked about the town hall layer. That seems to be extremely useful and very general purpose. You could apply it to ICOs, but a host of other use cases as well. Is that what you have envisioned?
Oh, 100%. So we're building the system to solve the business problem of making ICOs better, but you could reappropriate Town Hall to create a monetized Stack Overflow, a Stack Overflow that pays developers to answer questions, a Quora that pays experts to spend their time answering questions, a WikiLeaks that pays people to leak classified information. There's a number of use cases, and we've designed it, and we're releasing these features not as a unified framework, but piecemeal. So all of these components, in software, we talk about decoupling. A good software is very decoupled from, components are decoupled from each other. So Town Hall is its own autonomous framework, which is available for download. And it's our hope that people use it to build incentivized communication systems that pay people to provide value. Because I think we can all agree there's a lot of low value comments on the internet. And in some cases, wouldn't it be nice if there was a better signal to noise ratio?
Yeah. So if I'm looking at investing in an ICO, I come to the Menlo One platform, hopefully pretty often, and I'm kind of comfortable with the user experience design, and I'm coming in and I kind of know where to look to see, hey, what is bubbling to the top? What is trending to the top based on these set of criteria? I'm sure there is some degree of customization. I'm only interested in healthcare ICOs because that's what I understand. Probably I can do some degree of customization from my end, and within that slice, there's all these chatter, if you will, that's going on within your ecosystem that you're bringing together in a coherent fashion, and through a layer of user experience design, you're presenting it in a consumable manner, in a way that I can consume it quickly and effectively. But then in some sense, I'm grateful or thankful to the fact that, wow, while this has been assembled, this piece came from Joe, this piece came from Bob, this piece came from Mike, and perhaps now I'm guessing this at some point when I say, hey, I want to invest in this ICO and I want to put this much of my investment into that, I'm imagining that it would be some kind of a transaction fee that is then divided, of course, between the platform and Menlo One itself, but amongst all of these other players that have contributed towards my decision making. Is that kind of where it is going?
It's important that we don't take a direct transaction fee from the ICOs themselves.
Yeah.
Because I think it's kind of cheesy, right? I mean, we're all about the philosophy. I think the philosophy of disintermediation allows for network effects and for scale. I mean, look at the success of the Bitcoin network. Yeah. In the philosophy of Bitcoin, you know, people should be paying for, there's an ancient Silicon Valley expression. If you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And so if we don't want to be the product, then we have to pay to play. We have to pay for it to transact. And there are aspects of the platform which require that. For instance, if you wish to comment in the forum, it costs a little bit of Menlo token, you know? And if you want to vote up or down as to whether or not you think a comment is good or bad, that requires an even smaller amount of Menlo token. Right. But then that goes into a pool, and then the payout to that goes to the people with the most valuable comments.
Yeah.
We have another system where, the guild system where, if you're trying to make an investment decision and you're not sure whether or not this is this particular ICO, it has the best technology. Well, we're incentivizing the best blockchain experts in the world. We're talking the Vitalik's and the Vlad's and all these blockchain experts to add their expertise to a conversation. And the higher the reputation of the group, the guild, the higher the payout is for them. So there's going to be a bunch of random people maybe forming guilds, and then some of the best blockchain experts in the world, or the best business experts in the world, or the best AI experts in the world, helping to vet these deals. And we're paying these experts to, we're not, the community, the software itself is paying these experts to provide this expertise. So for the retail investor, they get to feel like the boss, right? They get to feel like they have all this expertise at their fingertips. And this is through the power of smart contracts and disintermediation that we're able to do this.
You're crowdsourcing all the knowledge together. Yeah. So, all right. I think we have covered two aspects. You painted the picture of the various ICOs that you have been through, experience with, and then the challenges that you found, and then elements of the solution that you're building out. Can we now fast forward? I think you called it Vision 2020. Let's go to that, no pun intended, but can we go to 2020, a few years from now, a couple of years from now, and assuming Menlo One is on its way to achieving its vision, how do you see people experiencing that? Give me an end user viewpoint, from both angles, from the ICO and the end user angle, the retail investor angle.
Yeah. I call this our 2020 vision, because it's a fun name, right? This is the world as it could be in 2020, right? And it's really up to us to craft this. And let's pause for a second. Let's go big picture. Let's survey early stage venture funding as it is right now. The majority of venture capital in the world for tech startups is in this one little region, the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
Well, a nice place, but an expensive place, and it's a challenging ecosystem for most people with a fantastic business or technology idea to make it. And I know we hear about all these startups, coming out left and right, and it sounds like anyone can get funding there, but it's actually extremely hard. Actually, 99.9% of startups who attempt to make it there fail, because it's, making it in this very, business is done there in a way that's very old, right? It's handshakes, it's who you know, it's personal connections. It's actually a contradiction to the kind of technology that's been funded there, right? Where you can, look, you and I right now, we're in different parts of the world, and we're talking as though we're having this great conversation, but for some reason in Silicon Valley, you have to be, and not just in the same room shaking hands, but in the right social circles, you have to go to the right parties, you have to go to, yacht parties, and you have to do all this crazy stuff. For technologists who would prefer to be in the garage building things, they have to stop being productive building, and they have to go play the social game. And of course, this ecosystem is off limits to a lot of people. You know, it's you know, reserved for people of a certain age range, usually from a certain pedigree economically and socially. Women are often excluded from this environment. If they're not English speaking, forget it, right? There's no way. And so, but it's a paradox, because if you look at anywhere you find the internet, you find internet engineers. You know, you find people writing software. You can go to the mountains of Tibet, and you'll find someone. As soon as they can get a signal, there's gonna be some guy there tinkering on his phone, hacking on that internet. You know. There's 3 billion people on the internet right now. And if everywhere you find the internet, you find innovation, then you would expect, like the funding for you know, people who are doing innovative things to be, you know, more democratized, you know, but if half the venture capital in the world is in the Bay Area, it's like, wait a second, there isn't 1.5 billion people in the Bay Area. Like, you know, I mean, driving on the Bay Bridge, it may seem that way, but you know, at rush hour. But there's a but it's so the opportunity is not democratized. So for me, what I find so great about not just about blockchain, but about crowdfunding on the blockchain is that for the first time, people can transact value. Right. So you can, if you had a great idea for a company, you had a great, you thought of a great JavaScript plugin, or you have a great t-shirt slogan idea, you know, anyone in the world can set up a Kickstarter, and anyone can send them money. It's effectively a donation. And like this model has been proven, right? The communication technology enables us to find each other and share ideas. But the transaction of value has not been as democratizes information, now it has, right? So you know, my vision for, you know, what the world will look like in 2020 is a bunch of brilliant people who have a great idea. Let's say they've come up with an algorithm to alternate, water, you know, what crops are watered to make crops grow better. Right. And it ties in with satellites, and there's this wonderful piece of software that's going to increase food production and feed hungry people. Instead of having to fly to San Francisco and go to a yacht party and kind of hang out at Pete's Coffee and stuff. Instead they can stay in their garage wherever they are. Maybe they're in Brazil or Indonesia, or they're in China, or they're in Canada, or wherever, Michigan, and broadcast from their garage their idea, and find the people who might want to fund it, and maybe it's a great idea for a t-shirt, maybe it's a great patent, maybe it's a great surfboard, an innovative Bluetooth interactive surfboard, whatever. Let's say not every venture capitalist is into surfing, I don't know, but they can find the people who are into surfing, who have capital to invest, and raise money from them without even having to leave their garage. And the impact of that is that all of a sudden everybody on the internet, then all 3 billion of us have the opportunity now to fundraise for an innovative idea. So in effect, what I think we're going to do is, one can't argue that the venture capital Silicon Valley venture capital ecosystem has done marvelous things for humanity. I mean, again, like look at the way we're talking. Like this is a wonderful bit of software, probably with San Francisco VCs backing it, right? But so Facebook and Google, wonderful for humanity, Genentech, Intel, et cetera. So what if you didn't have to fly to America to this one place to get funding? What if anyone on the internet could fundraise? And I think what we're going to see is, 1,000x, and without being too grandiose about it, the 1,000x of the quality of life for everyone on Earth, because all of a sudden, anyone who has a fantastic idea, even if it is a moonshot, can fundraise. And so we're going to see innovation from every corner of the Earth, from people who were previously restricted from these decentralized funding sources.
And that's exactly what we have seen happen in ICO world is suddenly you hear people of South Korean descent or Chinese or people from Russia. You suddenly are having access to all these great ideas. I'm seeing that as a podcaster. I have all these guest speakers of different background, different parts of the world with brilliant ideas. And suddenly, like you said, you know, there doesn't seem to be a concept of the distance here. And the world is truly flat, finally, thanks to the internet. Not just that the world is flat, but now you have a way of using money, a different type of a money that is cross-border, and you can suddenly participate in these fundraising opportunities globally. And of course, there are regulations to adhere to in different geos. And so long as we do that, the opportunity is certainly far greater than it has ever been. I totally agree with you. So that,
yeah,
the reason why in the Vision 2020 you took time to elaborate that is you're saying that is your driving passion. You know, that's what you're trying to enable.
That is what I'm trying to enable. And so the thing about ICOs as they are today is that they don't entirely represent the transaction of value yet. It's still a Kickstarter model. You know, there's most of these ICOs do not have a mechanism that transfers value back to the token buyers in a way that's completely trustless. Okay, so a lot of these, they're just throwing money at these companies, and everyone's crossing their fingers, and there's no regulation and there's no enforcement. But, you know, I think if we can keep ICOs going and if we can keep blockchain technology evolving, and by the way, it's really not a guarantee. And if you look at technologies like, you know, AI, which has had several iterations of falling short of its promise, it hasn't quite lived up to its expectation. And so it's kind of died and come back several times. It's kind of a sort of a zombie technology, you know. But if we can keep decentralization, we can keep blockchain going, then we can innovate more of the infrastructure. Right. So the person, making maybe they want to crowdfund a record. Right. Maybe it's everyone's favorite band. It's an amazing band in South Korea or something. And they're crowdfunding for the record. Right. But the IP for the record is going to go on the blockchain. Right. And so to listen to a song, you have to check it out from a technology like MediaChain or something, where the token holders, the people who bought the token in the ICO get a percentage of the sale. Or there'll be e-commerce systems that are fully developed where if you want to, you know, buy the innovative, so the innovative surfboard company in Costa Rica will sell their surfboard on the blockchain where everyone can see the sales, the revenue, the money coming in, the money coming out, payroll will be on the blockchain, everything will be transparent, so that stakeholders don't have to rely on handwritten contracts and lawyers and governments and judges and cops and guns to enforce a contract. But instead, they're really just betting on the company's vision and their ability to get their idea. All the transactions are on chain. So, you know, for every surfboard, if you buy the surf token, then every surfboard that's sold, you get 2% of the revenue for the year, which is fantastic, right? Because right now to do that, you got to hire a whole bunch of lawyers. And I don't know about you. I don't even know, would begin to notice to, I'd have to hire a lawyer here in America. I'd have to hire a lawyer in Costa Rica. I don't even know where to begin. Googling for a Costa Rican lawyer, that sounds expensive. And if I want to make a 10K investment, I'm going to end up spending 15 or 20K just to enforce the contract. So doing this right now across borders is cost prohibitive, which is one of the reasons why it's not done. I think that by 2020, hopefully we're going to have the technological infrastructure to lay down these truly trustless smart contracts and truly trustless crowdfunding mechanisms, so that we really are transacting value and it's not an investment or a hope, which, you know, probably, you know, most of the ICOs are right now.
Okay. I will bring you down from the vision to the ground level. Ground level 2020, not vision 2020. You are logging into Menlo One system in 2020. So Can you now show me the before and after? Because we have seen the before and the problems that the current ICO marketplace is fraught with. So in the after scenario, can you walk us through how things you intend things to look?
Sure, and I'll take like an inherently like non-technical business.
Yes, yes.
So let's say a bunch of guys in I don't know, we'll pick another in Mexico City have a wonderful you know, they're a local bunch of street artists, and they have a great slogan, right? A great slogan. They know the word on the street. They know they're going to sell a million T-shirts. Everyone in Mexico City, it's a highly populated city. Everyone's saying this phrase, whatever it is, and they put it on a T-shirt. And so they have they throw up their Menlo One profile. They fill it out in 5 seconds, and they start, you know, messaging all of their favorite, street artists, the Street Artist Guild, and then the T-shirt Guild, right? And then the e-commerce Guild. And they say, hey, you know, you're betting on us to, you know, to print these, you take our slogan and put it on the T-shirt. We're incentivized because we want to make a lot of money. We've already validated this. Here's a video, everyone, you know, with this funny slogan, and like, you know, you're betting on this T-shirt, right? And so you, as the investor, you're like, wow, these guys, all right, look at the street artists, the cool guys, like Banksy's backing them. You know, we got Shepard Fairey backing them. Like, this is, there's something legitimate here. They really dig. They know the culture, what's going on. And like, look, the T-shirt company, like, wow, they really picked like the guy from, you know, the Hanes CEO is in a guild, and he thinks they're printing in high quality. They're using the right ink, and like, wow, Mark Cuban is following this. That's pretty interesting. Wow, he's good at picking companies. And so, you know, what the heck, you know, it could be a fun project. Let me just throw a dollar at it. And, you know, that dollar then, you know, entitles you to, and you can see on the, you know, there'll be an icon, or there'll be a graphic that explains that all of the T-shirt sales are entirely on the blockchain. So whenever there's e-commerce company goes up, for every dollar that goes into the company, you know, 10 cents is divided amongst everyone who buys the tokens, and I own 1/100th of that. And so I get a taste of the revenue. So I'm really betting on that these guys are going to print this T-shirt. They're incentivized because they're onto something. They want to make money. They want to get a T-shirt out. I want a taste of it. I want to be a part. It's fun, right? I'm in the driver's seat. I'm in the back seat of this. This is early stage venture funding. You know, you're betting on the horse, right? You're betting on the idea. It's fun to invest in the team and the idea. And so, you know, a few months later, lo and behold, you check your Menlo wallet, and you see that, you know, those tokens are going up in value, because when I cash them out, I get a piece of the revenue from these T-shirts that are flying off the shelves, and I don't have to trust that they're going to come back to me, or the token isn't a speculative thing. I can see on the blockchain all the T-shirt revenue. Isn't that fun? I've set up an alert that just to buzz me every time I've made $100 on this investment of these guys selling these T-shirts. And, you know, and this, you know, and the exciting thing about this is that when it's one person betting $1 million, if it's one person betting $1 million, that they'll bet on certain types of things and certain types of people in certain places. But if it's a million people betting $1, it dramatically changes. What's at stake, and it dramatically changes what it is they'll fund, and who they'll fund, and where they'll fund. Right. And so, yeah, and like for the retail investor, it's like you log on to Menlo One, you see the thing, you click yes, and then like you get a buzz on your phone every so often when you made $100 on this investment. But, you know, maybe you've set up an alert for, you've always wanted a hoverboard, right? You've always wanted, who hasn't wanted? And we're talking to Marty McFly, 1985, like kind of like, you know, like kind of hoverboard. And a bunch of physicists in Switzerland think they have a hoverboard design, and you're like, you know what, it sounds like a moonshot, but I'll put a dollar on it. And you know, you get a buzz every time that they've raised another dollar. You get a buzz on your phone, a notification every time they hit a milestone. And, you know, for the retail investor, it's like any early stage you know, venture funding, you're along for the ride, and you're having fun helping companies innovate, but also you know there is a financial upside to it.
Fantastic. I think that's a very clear portrayal of the end picture. Thank you for doing that, Matt. That was, at least I could visualize. I was getting very excited just listening to you on what's possible. So let's come back down to the present.
Yeah.
So where are you guys? Are you guys planning an ICO? You're planning to raise money? Is that for technology development? Is that for marketing? Is it for all of it? Can you just walk us through where you are and how do you plan to get to the next step here?
Sure. So even though we're talking about investments and we're talking about placing bets and whatnot, you know, we've been building software a long time, and we've been architecting pieces of this complex architecture for quite a while. And yeah, we're not, it's not an investment with us. We have, you know, we're selling Menlo Token because it's a critical part of our communication infrastructure, and which is out now. And, you know, it's for, we're trying to encourage developers to download our framework and leverage our protocol and play with our tools. And Menlo Token is key for those tools to work. So we're selling Menlo Token. It's not an investment. It's, you know, it's a critical piece of software. People are effectively buying our software. You know, and so I think anyone who's interested in, you know, the development of this type of technology, or is a developer wants to play with it, or is managing or knows a bunch of developers, you know, this is, I think it would be, and we're only making so many of them, a billion to be exact, you know, I think it would be, you know, so that, I mean, that's why we're selling it. And with the profits from selling, you know, if it sells well, I think it will. With the profits of that, we're, you know, as a company, we're going to continue building open source software. After Town Hall, we're building our governance layer guilds, and then we're building you know, Menlo Core, and then finally we're building the, you know, the marketplace. You know, we're building the marketplace, you know, software. And we're going to launch the whole thing, and every aspect is going to be open source. Everything about it is designed to be forked and played with. This is for the community. Our vision is that at the end of this, you know, Team Menlo could get hit by a bus and the entire system will just go on without us.
Got it. So is that the only way that people can get a hold of Menlo tokens now is to, Let me understand this. They have to pay with Menlo tokens to get your software. Did I get that right?
Oh, so Menlo token is part of how our software works.
Okay.
It's used for reputation. It's used for governance, and it's used for transactions, payments for communication.
How do I get a hold of a Menlo token today?
That is a good question. At this particular moment, you can't, but we are having a token sale this summer. We have a soft date of July 16th. So the token will be on sale then, and we are sort of dogfooding the Ethereum ICO experience. We are selling our token in the style of a regular ERC-20 token sale.
Got it. And is that the start of the pre-sale? Is that the start of the token sale? What is it? Are you guys having the pre-token and the token sale?
July 16th is the main sale. There will be a pre-sale. We haven't set a date yet. We'll also be hosting sort of an online hackathon, and we'll be giving away some tokens there. Trying to get people to check out our software, and our ICO marketplace is one expression of what this can do. But we're really excited to see, you know, all the other stuff that can be built with it. You know,
you're essentially using your token to start building your community right from the get-go. This is not so much a token sale for you as it is a community building exercise, interest generation, and participation, and all of that.
Oh, it's primarily, it's almost entirely community building. Yeah.
And having said that, what is the amount of money you're planning to raise through this token sale?
Well, we have a hard cap of 30 million.
Okay.
We won't be selling any more than 30 million worth of tokens.
Okay. And starting July 16th, is there an end date to that, or is it still in the works?
We'll keep it open for about 30 days.
Okay. And where do people go? I'm sure by now they got your vision, and many of them will be very excited and will want to know, where can they go to get more information and follow you and so on and so forth?
Is just go to our website, menlo.one. So that's menlo.one. And join our Telegram. There's always an interesting conversation going on in there. I'm pretty proud of the community in our Telegram. There's always an interesting chat, and most of us are in there. I've stopped Facebook at this point. Our Telegram is kind of my only social media.
Yeah, I have seen that for ICOs. Yeah, this is a curiosity question. Are you applying any of your vision elements that you plan to have for other ICOs? Are you self-applying any of those to your own ICO, or is it too early to do that?
Well,
I'm putting the cart before the horse, because you're taking this to build that. And then I'm asking the reverse question. Do you have any of those ICO choosing elements applied to your own ICO?
I mean, we do. You know, we're very much of the philosophy of building trustless systems. And so it's not like people are sending us money and crossing their finger and hoping that we do something. It's like, we have software, it'll be working on mainnet in time for the ICO itself and on testnet next week. It's a completely trustless system. You know, you send ETH, we send tokens, and the tokens then work with our software immediately. So it's not as though, this is the vision that I would like to see the world be. And so right now, you know, like there's only so much one can safely do with Solidity. It gets very dangerous making very complex applications right now. But you know, hopefully, I would, the reason I'm focused on crowdfunding and this particular angle is because I think that this is the leverage to, this is the bridge to ensure that this type of technology continues to get funded and continues to grow. And it's our hope that, yeah, while there's not e-commerce in the blockchain yet entirely, and there's not all these other systems, that, you know, we will be the catalyst for spurring this type of thing. And even though our smart contract is relatively simple compared to what's going to be coming down the pipe in the next 2 years, you know, we are adhering to this sort of trustless philosophy.
Fantastic. Matt, are there other points you wanted to communicate to our audience? Maybe questions I did not ask, points you wanted to make?
Let me think. No, that's about it. I think we covered it. You know,
you did a great job. I really thank you on behalf of all our listeners. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.